نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم. We will start from this presentation onwards the mention of the third group in the Quran. As you must have heard in my earlier presentations, that the Quran, the way it has been arranged by the Almighty through Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, is not in the arrangement which is historical or in the chronological order. It is instead in a different order, which demands from the reader deeper reflection to find out what exactly could be the wisdom behind the new order, which is substantially different from the way it was revealed. And as I mentioned, on deeper reflection, what comes to the fore is that the Quran has been divided in its present form, which is the only form acceptable to the Muslims, in seven different groups. Each group has been arranged in such a manner that its first or first few surahs are Meccan, in other words, which were revealed in Mecca, while the Prophet ﷺ was preaching the message in Mecca for the first 13 years of his prophetic mission. And the next one or a few surahs are Madinan surahs, which is the last 10 years of the Prophet's life, which he passed, he experienced after he had migrated to Medina. This particular group, which I am going to present before you, is the third group, which has first 14 surahs, all Meccan, and only one surah, Surah An-Nur, as the Madinan surah of the group. As you can quite clearly guess, that the first 14 surahs are divided again into seven different groups or pairs, because as I mentioned earlier, the Quranic surahs are invariably broken down into pair surahs in such a way that two adjacent surahs together, they are serving the same subject or central theme, with one surah serving that central theme in one way, one angle, and the other in another angle. This particular group begins with Surah Yunus, which is a surah which primarily emphasizes the significance of Tawheed. Polytheism is condemned and Tawheed, unity of God, is emphasized. It is a well-known fact that people of Mecca, to whom the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, his message was delivered to begin with, and they were the people who were his immediate addressees, they were deeply entrenched in the sin, evil, or filth of polytheism. And this particular surah emphasizes more than anything else the fact that there is only one God, and He is the one who is running the affairs of this world. And each and every aspect of our material world, which is what surrounds us, clearly demonstrates the fact that there is only one thought, one will, one idea, which continues to prevail over the entire system. There isn't any conflict in the scheme of things that we are experiencing in this world, which in itself is a very clear proof of the fact there is only one God, there is only one power, there is only one administrator who is running the affairs of the entire world. However, quite apart from the subject of Tawheed, unity of God, we also have the clear mention of the hereafter and its significance. And as we have seen in the description of the earlier surahs, the Almighty also, as a proof of the life hereafter, mentions the law of Risala, the law that clarifies that in the case of the Rasul, the messengers of God, the Almighty had decided that there would come from time to time in the history of mankind men who would clearly present the message of God with this warning to the immediate addressees that if they are going to deny the message, despite knowing it to be from God, sooner or later they are going to be annihilated and destroyed by God Almighty, either through natural calamities or through the swords of the companions of the messenger. This law has been clearly mentioned in this particular surah. It has a number of important verses, but perhaps one important verse which cannot be ignored is the one that appears towards the end of the description of the story of Musa alayhi salam, when he presented his message to Pharaoh and his companions. And when after the culmination of the story, when Pharaoh was about to be drowned, the Almighty mentioned the fact that he addressed Pharaoh and said, Al-yawma nunajjika bi badanika litakuna liman khalfaka aya. Today, O Pharaoh, I am going to ensure that your body remains preserved so that it should become a cause for the later generations to see a sign of God Almighty and his power and might. And this is indeed what happened to the body of Pharaoh, because we know that it now has been discovered and is preserved and could be seen in the Museum of Cairo. The surah also talks about Nuh alayhi salam and his story to a certain degree of detail, and also talks about the story of Yunus, Jonah the prophet. That is what actually gives this surah its name. And the Quran mentions that there was no other nation which received the message of a messenger and denied it to begin with, and yet was not denied, yet was not destroyed by the Almighty, except for the nation of Yunus, Jonah. They denied the message of the messenger Yunus, and yet they were saved and rescued from the Almighty's wrath and displeasure, because the nation later repented en masse together and sought forgiveness from the Almighty. This surah is followed by Surah Hud, which is the partner surah of Surah Yunus. And the Almighty begins the surah by a very clear statement about how he has arranged the message of the Quran by saying that it is a book, Kitabun Uhkimat Ayatuhu Thumma Fussilat Min Ladun Hakimin Alim. It's a book which, to begin with, contains verses which are brief but full of meanings and depth. And then they are later explained by the Almighty, by the God who is knowledgeable and wise. That is exactly how the message of the Quran is. It talks about its basic principles in extremely brief and precise manner, and then later on goes on to explain the same verses in more details. The advantage of this style of presentation is that the basic thrust and focus of the message gets entrenched in the minds and hearts of the people who are reading it with an open mind. It is more likely to be internalized if you find that the message, the basic understanding, has been explained in brief, and then it is also explained in detail through examples and illustrations. That is exactly what the Quran has done. Its basic message is the significance of Tawheed, unity of God, the realization that there is going to be a life hereafter, and the fact that the Almighty has arranged for divine revelation, Wahi, to ensure that people are guided through the messengers that he had sent from time to time. Now, these three basic beliefs are mentioned time and time again in the Quran in a very brief and precise, comprehensive manner. And then later on, the same message unfolds itself in more detail. This particular surah has talked about those important messengers whose mention we find in a number of other surahs. Of course, the details vary. The details do have their own peculiar explanations which do add to the dimensions of the story. But the fact of the matter is that the basic thrust of the stories of all messengers is the same, that they came with a message from the Almighty. The message was clearly delivered to their respective nations. Most of the people who belonged to the elite class of the society, they rejected the messages. And later on, after a deadline was reached, the Almighty decided that those nations are going to be destroyed because of the crime that they did not accept the message from God, which they knew that it was from Him. So that we find in Surah Hud the mention of Nuh alayhis salam, Hud alayhis salam, Saleh alayhis salam, Lut alayhis salam, Shoaib alayhis salam, and Musa alayhis salam. These are the six important messengers whose messages and their stories have been mentioned in the Quran over and over again. And the purpose is very clear, so that the people of Mecca and the surroundings know very clearly that this book has not come just to preach and to convince. And even if it gets rejected, nothing is going to happen to the people who commit the crime of rejection. It has come with a very clear warning and mandate that if the message is not going to be received well by the people who are to be the immediate recipients of it, they are going to be destroyed in this very life before their punishment begins in the life hereafter. So that we find the details of this mention in Surah Hud. Thereafter, we have two more surahs in this group, which are Surah Yusuf and Surah Ra'd, both again appearing as a pair. Surah Yusuf is a beautiful story of one of the very prominent prophets of God, Yusuf alayhis salam, who was the great grandson of Ibrahim alayhis salam, and he was one of the 12 sons of Yaqub alayhis salam, whose other name was Israel, and therefore he was one of the Bani Israel, the children of Israel. This story, as is well known, begins with the mention of the fact that Yaqub alayhis salam was informed by his favorite son, Yusuf, Joseph, that he saw a dream wherein 11 stars and the sun and the moon were prostrating before him. And he mentioned to his son that this story should not be revealed to the other brothers, the 10 of the brothers who were jealous of him. And thereafter, the story unfolded itself by the mention that the jealous brothers of Yusuf, in order for them to be able to get rid of him, they conspired that they would ask their father that he should let them take Yusuf, young Yusuf, with them to a picnic. And that is exactly what happened. And there they decided that they would throw him into a well and thus get rid of him forever. And they returned presenting an excuse that while they were away playing around with each other, Yusuf was swallowed by a wolf. Later on, it mentions the fact that there was a caravan, trade caravan, which was passing by the well, and it recovered young Yusuf from the well. And Yusuf, as he was in appearance, most attractive and beautiful young man, he was taken to the market of Egypt, where he was sold for a very ordinary price. And thus, Yusuf ended up in the house of a very important official of the administrative system of Egypt. When he grew up, into a handsome young man, and the lady who was supposed to take care of him and raise him up as her son started falling in love with him. And ultimately, she tried to allure him and attract him towards herself. Yusuf alayhis salam, the way he was, an extremely pious young man, God-fearing, he refused to budge. And the end result was that as a result of the conspiracy that was hatched by the lady, he ended up behind the prison. In the prison, he found two prisoners, fellow prisoners, asking him to explain to them the truth and the true meanings of what they had dreamt. And Yusuf alayhi salam, he explained to one of them that the true meaning of the dream that he has seen is that he's going to be ultimately killed for the crime for which he has been imprisoned. And to the other person, he mentioned that the dream reveals that very soon he is going to be set free, and he is going to be again in the company of the king, wherein he is going to help him in whatever needs he expects from his servants. Yusuf alayhi salam asked this young man that when he is with the king, he should ask the king as to why was a man called Yusuf ever imprisoned. What was his fault? Later on, it so happens that the king sees a dream himself, and it's a strange dream. And ultimately, the man who returned to the king after being imprisoned, he was reminded of the fact that there is a man who is an expert in explaining what the true meanings of dreams are. He asked the king to be allowed to visit him in the prison, and thus enable Yusuf to get in touch with the king and explain to him as to what exactly were the true meanings behind the dream that he was experiencing and witnessing over and over again. As a result of the contact that took place between Yusuf alayhi salam and the king, Yusuf alayhi salam was ultimately provided with the opportunity of assuming the most significant role in the system of the Egyptian government, wherein he was entrusted with the task of ensuring that he plans how the agricultural production is to be planned and how the granary is to be preserved, taking into consideration the fact that there are going to be years which are going to be particularly dry, and the prevalence of drought would endanger the supply of food. He did it in such a beautiful manner, such a wise manner, that the subsequent years of particular dryness were faced with very little difficulty because the way Yusuf planned it. But what also happened during this period was that Yusuf alayhi salam's father, his family, his brothers, they all ultimately came to Egypt, where they were made aware of the fact that Yusuf, despite the fact that they had thought had been abandoned and perhaps had lost his life, was still alive and was provided by the Almighty with the opportunity to grow from strength to strength and to achieve the levels of excellence, both spiritual and material, which none of the brothers could ever imagine of. This story was revealed to the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, at a time when his brothers, that is, his fellow nationals belonging to the tribe of Quraysh, people living in Mecca, they were also trying, like Yusuf's brother were trying in the past, to get rid of him. The brothers of Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, also were trying to get rid of him. And this particular surah had come at a juncture when it helped the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, to understand and realize that God Almighty is not the one who is going to abandon him. And very soon there is going to come a time when the people who were trying to get rid of him would submit to the fact that he is the one who is the king of the area, who has prevailed both spiritually and materially. And this most certainly was the surah that must have given not just to the Prophet himself, but to his companions as well, a lot of boost and confidence that if the days that they were spending at the time when the surah was revealed were difficult and trying, the future is going to be much more promising and easier for them. This surah is followed by Surah Ra'd, which supports Surah Yusuf as its partner surah. And it again emphasizes the same fact that the people with good attributes, the noble people, the people who believe in the prophets, are most certainly going to ultimately prevail. This worldly life is a trial, and for the purpose of trial, the Almighty allows temporarily that evil forces dominate over the forces of virtue. But this domination is only temporary. This particular surah explains it with a beautiful example in the material world, and then goes on to emphasize that this temporary dominance of the people of Quraysh and Makkah is going to give way to the ultimate dominance of the people who are following the virtuous path. The Almighty mentions in this particular surah that those who are following the right path have certain attributes which are very clear. They are God-fearing. They always make sure that they abide by their covenants. They spend whatever they have given to them by the Almighty to please Him for the benefit of others. And they are the ones who make sure that they keep their relationships with their relatives and they maintain them properly. And whatever other virtues of goodness the Almighty has instilled in their minds and hearts, they value them and they follow them as best as they can. Such are the people, the surah says, who are most certainly going to be successful in the hereafter, and they are the ones who will accompany their parents, their brothers and sisters, and their children, provided if all others belonging to their family had likewise believed and followed the right path. This particular surah is followed by two other surahs, which are again in pairs, their partners. Surah Ibrahim, followed by Surah Hijr. Surah Ibrahim primarily mentions the same message, the message of Tawheed, the message of the fact that goodness and virtuous deeds are always going to prevail, going to end up in the success of those who followed them, and the evil way is not going to be allowed to prevail. In particular, there is this mention of the story of Ibrahim alayhis salam, the way he sacrificed for the sake of the Almighty, the way he faced lots of difficulties and opposition from the people who did not want to accept the message of God. And yet the Almighty enabled him and his children, progeny, to not only follow the right path without any problems as were imagined and attempted by his opponents, but the Almighty also made them the reason, way which he adopted to create his own house, which was meant for the purpose of worship by all peoples of all the world who wanted to follow the path of the unity of God. Finally, Surah Hijr is the surah which talks about the person reads the surah with an open mind. He is forced to believe that all that humans are benefiting from are God's blessings, which have to be used and consumed with an attitude of gratitude and thankfulness to the Almighty. And it also mentions a very important verse, which talks about the basic features of the Islamic message. It's the verse 90, which says, "Allah, inna Allah ya'muru bil adli wal ihsan." Allah orders all believers to deal fairly and with ihsan, that is, they have to be benevolent. وَيَنْهَا عَنِ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرِ وَالْبَغْشِ, and he stops, prevents people from all that is obscene and all that is transgressing limits and all that is wrong and unacceptable. This surah thus is a statement of the affirmation of Tawheed on the one hand and emphasizes the need to be virtuous on the other. So all in all these six surahs are an important part of the third group, which is talking about all the important topics which we find in the Quran. May the Almighty enable us to understand the Quran as best as is possible for us, and may He enable us to follow it properly.